Hey, are you tired of meeting with prospects only to have them put you off again and again, turning them into yet another missed opportunity? Are you tired of trying to do the same things in meetings and not seeing any improvement in the amount of business you're closing? Do you want to stop giving your time away in hopes that a client will buy something or someday transfer their assets? Well, Whiteboard University is our two-hour live workshop where we will teach you how to have engaging meetings with every prospect and client you meet with, how to quantify your advice so prospects are willing and excited to pay you a financial planning fee, and finally, where we teach you how to explain financial strategies in a dynamic, interesting way that will separate you from all the boring advisors who do the same old thing. If you're serious about having better client meetings and closing business faster, visit WhiteboardU.com today and sign up for one of our live workshops in November. Whiteboard University offers a 100% money-back guarantee if we don't help you improve your communication and meeting skills. That's WhiteboardU.com. We'll see you there.
Paul, thanks for being here, man. We go way back.
We do go way back. It's been 20th years when you were really young and you still are young. So congrats.
Thanks, man. Yeah, I was an advisor in diapers when I saw you on stage all the time. I was like, man, if I could be like that guy someday.
Yeah, I don't know about that.
Well, I'd love if you could kind of say, you know, where you are now. You've held some big posts in the industry, influenced a lot of advisors, big organizations. I'd love to kind of give the listeners just kind of a highlight of your progression in the business, and then I'll dive into some specific questions.
Yeah, well, first of all, Sten, great to see you. Thanks for having me. And so I've been in the business for 32 years, which is kind of crazy. And I started straight out of college as an advisor with AXA Equitable back in the day. And basically started out with an informal team with my roommate in college. And we grew into a formal team. And we kind of, you know, molded our business after some of the most top advisors in our firm that were focused on the small to medium-sized business market. So we kind of cold-called our way into the group and 401k space, and then started to work with the key executives, owners, and bonus plans, split dollar, estate planning, et cetera. Over that journey of about 7-8 years, we went from being a 6 and 63 life and health to getting a 7, 65 CFP, started gathering assets, charging fees, et cetera. About my 8th year in the business, our mentor asked us to leave our practice and basically start a third-party distribution organization for Equitable distributors. Mm-hmm. And we started calling on the wirehouse and regional broker-dealer type advisors, what we would call securities-based advisors. And we were providing them with advanced markets and estate planning support at the point of sale with their clients. A couple years after that, a bunch of senior folks left Equitable, went over to MetLife, and I followed them to start their third-party business. And so we had some traction there for about 8 years. And then I was asked to lead our career agency system, where actually I met you, and that was actually leading MetLife to New England Financial, where we had about 8,000 advisors across the country. As many people in the industry saw, as we actually, MetLife decided to get out of our retail business, and they spun us off in 2016, the Mass Mutual. I worked for a couple years doing the integration of legacy Mass, legacy Met field force. When that settled down, I took a leap of faith and raised my hand to lead our product organization over at Mass Mutual. So think about the life, annuity, disability, and worksite actuaries. And that was a really good learning experience for me on the financials and risk side of the business. Yeah. And very fortunate, about a year and a half ago, my boss, Mike Fanning, retired, and I got an opportunity to take a big chunk of his business, report to our CEO, Roger Crandall. And now I've got brand and marketing for Mass Mutual, have our career agency system again, broker, dealer, and trust organizations that support that business, and our institutional business. So think about BOLI and COLI, PRT, and some of the spread lending type businesses that big insurance companies like us are involved in. So it has been a long journey. It's been a lot of work. It's been a lot of growth and learning, but super rewarding along the way.
Yeah, man, those are some some heavy weights on the shoulders to carry. How many times, be honest, have you just thought to yourself, maybe I should just go be an advisor again?
So, you know, the funny thing is I've thought about it a lot. And my college roommate, Dave Cajal, who's still over at Equitable in a corporate role, we are very close still as couples, meaning my wife and his wife and him and I. And we talk about, what if we would have stayed? You know, we actually were on a track that started getting some really good momentum. We started to actually have some money under management, both 401ks and retail, and we understood the estate and business planning market. And some of our friends that played the long game, they haven't been on as many planes, trains, and automobiles as us. They've coached a lot of baseball, softball, and whatever teams, and we've been gone. And it's been rewarding in a different way, but I do say that the reflection sometimes is, did we make the right D or not?
Yeah. I mean, you're holding some jobs that very few people do, and I guess have experiences that most of us at the advisor level can't relate to. So I was excited to have you on to almost get a peek into what the level of information we have at the advisor level. We always have opinions about comp structure and the way that the organization's doing things. Yep. How would you coach advisors that are part of organizations to say, hey, there's more information. It's not as easy as you think it is, because you were an advisor. You've now lived in the corporate world. And one of the best things I loved about being around you is you were kind of like the advisor's leader. Like, I always felt like you were kind of one of us. How would you bridge that gap? What would you tell us as the advisors?
Yeah. So as advisors, and I truly believe this, you all in a successful practice have the best career path in the industry. Once you get over the hump and you actually have infrastructure, you know, client acquisition is there, you got recurrent revenue, et cetera. I truly believe there's no better, I'd say even profession that I've came across. What I would say though is the grass is not always greener in other organizations. And if I'm going to hang my shingle in my business and trust a leadership team and a firm with my practice, one is, I think you got to believe that the people that are running the organization are actually advocates for you and what you do every day and how you serve your clients, and are trying to make the best decisions to make sure that they can give you the resources and comp you need to be successful, but that they're also playing the long game and they're going to be here, you know, 10, 15, 20 years from now. So there's not disruption to you and your clients moving forward. And I think that's a trade that a lot of people don't understand when you're in the field. There's only so many, ways to split a dollar. And how do you actually split it to optimize the business and your clients, which is all of you as advisors? So I think that's something that's really, really important. I also think the other thing is, in a world of planning and best interest, you got to make sure you've got the technology, the client, the compliance support, and the product, platform to truly be open architecture and be able to serve your clients at the highest level in the industry, so that you are not compromised versus the competition, and your client isn't compromised doing business with you because they get better product availability or a better experience somewhere else. And so I think that's something that you all actually have to make sure you're comfortable with. I think the watch item for a lot of people is, you know, payout, and sometimes they will chase the economics. If I was sitting as an advisor right now, I would be like, does the organization also have scale? Because this is a industry that continually is having costs go up with tech and compliance and regulatory, and, you know, margins are going down. And we need to make sure that we've got a business that has the long term in mind and has the financials to be here for the long term, because this is a very long term business. I think that's also super, super important. And those are some of the big things that, you know, I think about. And in being a mutual company, it's interesting because most people would never think about us as being a player in wealth management, and we are. And I would say being with a mutual, and I didn't understand this, being with two publicly traded companies, like we are making decisions for 5, 10, 15, 20 years, not for quarterly earnings. And that is a much different decision-making framework that I think a private company affords you all to know that luxury exists. The last thing I would say is there's a lot of private equity money chasing a lot of organizations, whether it's RIA or independent broker dealers. There are a lot of smart people. But once you start to roll up these organizations, whether it's the RIA roll-ups or it's a broker dealer roll-up, and I'm not going to use any names, for the private equity player to get the value out of that organization, you're going to have scale and technology, common operating platforms, and the, hey, we do it 7, 8, 9 different ways is not going to be a thing because the math will not work. So be careful when you hang your shingle in that space because change is going to happen because the economics would say that it has to happen. So those are just some swing thoughts that I would have for the advisor base out there.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that. And I think you gave me that type of advice years ago. And it didn't land. And I was maybe not as coachable back then as I wish I would have been, but I did get caught up in the payout. You get some success as a young advisor, and you think a change is the thing that's going to help you grow. And I look back, and at every firm I was with, as I bounced around trying to find myself, every time I had what I needed to grow my business. Maybe yep. Something could have been a little different, a little bit better. But you know, for any advisor, that's like, where can you grow the most? And there's always, you know, economic questions down the road about like, is there a time to spin off? Like, but if you think about it too often, like I did, it actually stunts the growth of your business because you're kind of getting hung up as opposed to just getting more clients.
You know, and that's a great point because I think a couple things. One, we were at Equitable for 7 or 8 years and we left and went independent. And this was my partner and I, and like, you know, 3 staff people, junior advisor, and our general agent who ultimately brought us back to start that third party organization said, look, you all are on about a 70% grid rate. Now think about that. You all on the phone are at 90, but we were at 70 back in the day. That was a thing.
Yeah.
And he said, at Equitable, I'm paying rent for you. We've got localized support, so supported value prop locally. You got FICA match. You got benefits, at least for your proprietary, you know, business. At the end of the day, you're going to get paid about 20 to 25% more. Can you go hang your shingle in a strip mall with another couple advisors that you have been calling you? And can you create the same value proposition for that 20 to 25%? And we were young too. We were 28 years old and we thought we had it figured out.
Yeah.
The math didn't play out. We didn't at that time have the scale to actually get all of those benefits. And the other thing that happened that we didn't even understand is we were spending more time working on the business versus working with our clients, growing those relationships and getting new ones. It completely flipped our activity on our head. And maybe it was better for later down the road. But I think going back to you and what you said, comp is comp is comp, and it's got to be fair. Yeah. But where are you going to be in a position to grow your business and spend the most amount of time benefiting your clients with the least amount of disruption and distraction? And that's something that isn't about 92 and a half or 80 or whatever it is. It's how do you get the support to grow?
Yeah. Where would you, I know MassMutual now, I had Brian Maywinney on, we got deep into financial planning. We were geeking out. It was great. And the progress you guys have made in 7, 8 years on that front, the teaming front, catch us up on kind of how is MassMutual looking at that? I know it was a thing when I was there. We had special, you know, meetings for teams that were high performers. if somebody is at a big firm, but they feel alone, even if the metrics are fine and they get resources, I've seen advisors transition because they're like, I just need help, or I need to join a team. How are you guys addressing that?
Yeah. So the good news is right now about 40% of our advisors are on teams. If I think about the best practices in the industry, solo practitioners, a hard way to do that. Yeah. And the reason why I believe that is if you're delivering the best outcomes for your clients, you have to be a balanced advisor. And that actually means protection expertise. That means wealth management expertise. That means planning expertise. And for some, if it's still an art form, and I wish it was more, business planning expertise. And to have all of those sleeves with one advisor, it's really hard to truly be calling yourself an expert. Yeah. So I think teams have came together because of bringing joint expertise to bring better value to the individual, the family, or the business owners they serve. So that's super, super important. I think the other thing why we're very bullish on teams is just capacity. And you think about all the promises you've made to clients over the years to be able to get to where you are today, to have 100 to 150 really good clients, and you're still trying to print A clients and maybe prune B clients, you've got a responsibility to all of those clients that gave you the shot to be in this business. So having junior members allows you to deliver on those promises and why you started in this business. And as you know, monetize appropriately those relationships as well. You're giving them the value they should get. And as you know, there's probably a lot of opportunity there that you're not seeing because you're not spending time. So I think teams are important for expertise. Teams are important for capacity so that we can actually, you know, serve more people. So what we're doing is this has been a constant evolution. And I would say the hangup is really around technology, and the systems in this industry have never been built for team. They've all been built for solo practitioners. When you think about compensation, you think about splits, you think about rules of visibility on cases, whether they're new or in force. Mm-hmm. So that's what we're spending time on is, yes, we've got meetings and study groups and recognition for teams. We've evolved to compensation and grid rates for teams. But now it's like, how do you stick the landing with making sure the technology supports the team like a business versus a collection of seven different people trying to get stuff done, which frustrates the team, right? And I would say this is never a complete thing. It's an evolution and a journey, not a destination. And we're on it, because if you want to properly serve, I'd say, mass affluent to high net worth clients, you can't do it by yourself. Like, it's just too hard. And then I would say the last thing about teams is, as you know, is being part of a culture that is driving everybody to learn and be better and drive productivity is also cool when you think about a team. And it's very lonely when you're trying to do that as an advisor with an assistant or so. It just doesn't feel the same. It's better to be part of something that's much bigger than you, because you probably end up accomplishing a lot more for yourself, your family, and your clients.
Yeah, I think of quality of life too. And I've with all the thousands of advisors we coach, it's like, you will not reach your full potential alone. A lot of sole advisors I run into, it's like, they have a really hard job. Like, they're not great bosses to work for because they're working a lot.
Yeah.
They're doing too many things they shouldn't. They're not living in their superpower. That when I am able to now come into the office, just meet with clients and delegate everything that I'm not great at, like, I enjoy my job more, and I'm home way more than I ever have been. And I make more money than I ever have. And so I do think there's a stance I'll take that says the healthiest advisor practice that serves the clients the most is some form of a team.
Completely agree. And, you know, I was even, and you hit the nail on the head when you think about, you know, family lifestyle balance. and being able to be spending your time on the things that are in your wheelhouse, your superpower, using your words, and the most revenue producing activity or solution producing activity for your clients. Like, that is where you start to shed things to other people to free up your capacity to do the things that are most impactful and across the center of the plate for your skill set.
That's great. One thing I'd love to touch on is we used to go on some cool trips together back in the day.
Yep.
And what I loved about those trips is being around advisors. And there was something in my head early on where I was like, there's a typical advisor. They either live in a certain state where there's enough people, they came from money. Like, I had these limiting beliefs of like why I wasn't there yet, because it just wasn't in the cards for me. But then when I started getting on those trips, like, everyone was kind of different. They had some commonalities, but like, they came from different places. Not everybody came from money. Like, so the head trash that was holding me back from being an elite advisor was kind of, you know, was deconstructed when I was hanging around all these other advisors.
Yep.
Those are the kind of advisors you get to hang out with a lot. What would you tell, you know, where most advisors are kind of in that middle where they're struggling, grinding it out, but they don't get to hang out around, you know, maybe the best advisors in the country. What don't most advisors know about those kind of top tier advisors?
So it's kind of interesting. I think a couple common themes is the top advisors that I spend most of my time with didn't come from money, didn't come from access into ultra high net worth clients and businesses. They came from a blue collar mentality, which is they grounded out every single day. And that urgency and that fear of, hey, if I don't get up and hold myself accountable to the activity, is still in them today. Mm. Now, that energy is spent in different places. Yeah. It's not, I got to set 3 appointments a day. It's like, I need to think about, how do I grow my practice through acquisition? And where do I find those folks that are looking to retire? Where do I look for capital to bring on assets, for an example? It is what we were just talking about, is how do I bring on junior partners or even senior advisors to help open up capacity for the organization and help grow the business in either serving the existing group I have or client acquisition, right? It's things around education and continuing to grow, whether it's getting a CFA or a CFP or estate planning, et cetera. So the people that I like literally spend a lot of my time with, and I was just with 6 or 8 of them over the last couple of days, they never stop growing and pushing themselves in that activity and that urgency. You know, guys and gals that I've seen that aren't at the top, they typically are more around the lifestyle practice that this industry can afford. They're going to like be focused on, if I could just make $300,000 a year, $400,000 a year, have a couple people that support me, spend 3 days on the golf course and a couple days, you know, working, like, I'm good. Yeah. But the people that are building are not that mentality. It's, how do I grow? Am I in the right place for growth? Am I surrounding myself with people that are pushing me to grow? And that's what I was just coming from, was a study group, which is literally, these people are getting on planes, trains, and automobiles. They met at those meetings that you talked about that were rewarding our top, you know, performers. And now they've kept a formal and an informal network that they either meet face-to-face or they meet virtually. And they're talking about the things they're doing, the things they're feeling and seeing to continue to better serve their clients or grow their business. The other thing I would say, in addition to credentials, they're spending a lot of time on their own dime involved in the industry, going to various conferences where new technology is being talked about, alternatives are being talked about, top advisors are talking about teaming and how they're using technology, et cetera, et cetera. So invest in your business mentality, and I've never reached the finish line. I'm still growing and learning and developing. Like, that is the common themes that all of these top advisors typically have.
Yeah, I think the...
It's like in their DNA.
Yeah, the five people you hang out with. And so I think for all of us, you know, here, I'm an advisor, everybody listening, you know, who are you hanging out with? And if you hang out with studs, no matter how uncomfortable it'll be, you will rise up. Like, you won't have a choice but to get better. And it's still surprising me how many advisors are just lonely and or just copying average activity and surprised they're getting average results. That I believe in our business, there's a direct correlation between like how much you invest in yourself and how uncomfortable you get and how quickly you get where you want to go. I don't think the 15 plus year path is the only one we have, but I do feel like it's the one most people are okay taking.
And you know, it's interesting about comfortable, like in the corporate world, people will ask me, what is one or two things that you would, you know, call out as learnings along your journey? And somebody told this to me about 15 years ago when we were back at Met. I didn't understand it till I understood it, is if you want to grow, you got to be comfortable being uncomfortable. As soon as you get in your comfort zone, the growth is over. And I think about my journey, whether it was when I was young and wanted to be a good surfer, or when I was racing motocross, or whether I was starting, you know, my practice, or now as a executive, like when I threw myself in the water with people that were way better surfers and was the low person on the totem pole, guess what? I became better than I ever thought I was going to be, even if I was still the lowest one in the pecking order.
Yeah.
And that's happened in my business career as well, because you consistently get out of your comfort zone and that's where the learning happens. Yeah. And so I think that is a common theme of all of these people that you hang out with. And I've had the luxury of learning from, you know, over time. You see them and you just think they showed up that way. Right. And the answer is no. There's been a lot of growth and a lot of nervous times to throw themselves out and be vulnerable to actually get to where they are. And the funny thing is, we all think they've arrived. They still think they're on the 20-yard line with 80 yards to go.
Nice, yeah.
In their mind.
Yeah, for me, I think thankfully I got to a place to where I was like, I'm whatever the motivator was at the time, whether it was, you know, I need other people to think that I'm doing well or get the approval, but I was willing to get uncomfortable, went from, I don't want discomfort to I'm willing to stay in it for a little bit. And then I get around some of these high performers that make me uncomfortable. And I'm like, it looks like they live in it. Like, it's not that they're trying to run through it. Like, I got to the point where I was like, I'll take a cold shower for a minute, but I'm ready to jump out. It's like some of these guys and gals are just like, I live in this zone that all of you are afraid of. And it's like, how do you get to a point where it's a tension you can just sit in. And then that's something new. If you can unlock that, it's game over.
And the interesting thing though, is I don't think anybody truly unlocks it. I think people prepare for it, meaning they're studying, they're practicing, they're rehearsing, so that when you see them on stage, like you saw me 15 years ago and thought that I, you know, had it all figured out.
Yeah.
I didn't have it all figured out, but I actually worked really hard so that when I was on that stage, I wasn't wasting anybody's time. And because you went through that talk 20 times, you believed it, you felt it, right? You listen to Kobe Bryant and people say, hey, you have ice in your veins. I don't have ice in my veins. I've taken that shot 1,000 times. And when the game is on the line and they pass me the ball, what's one more time?
Yeah.
It's because I prepared for that moment. And guess what? Even when you prepare, you're going to not always stick the landing, but you got to get back and prepare again because that's the game, right? It's never like you've arrived. And I think people that have that mentality, you feel like they're living it, but it's almost like they've accepted the process and they've actually done the work. So the confidence comes with that, even knowing inside, a lot of times you still got the anxiety and you're not all that.
That's true. That's a good word. Well, man, brother, it was good to catch up. I miss this. I loved our talks in the past. So everybody listening, I hope every word he says, it comes with a lot of experience and a lot of reps. So appreciate you, brother.
Hey, I appreciate you too. And the one thing, I don't know if I called it out, but for all of you that will be listening, you have choice. Distribution and expertise, which is what advisors bring to the table, clients, serving those clients, those relationships, and your ability to actually understand how to get them to the finish line is a really powerful position. Wherever you end up hanging your shingle in your business, just make sure you're doing it with and for people that you believe, one, are advocates for you, and two, literally have your best interest in mind to help you get to the best place in your journey. And it is a journey and it's not a destination. And, you know, Stan, I'm bummed that you're not part of our organization today. I know you do still do some business with us through our annuities and life insurance, et cetera. But again, like, these are special relationships, and that's what you deserve as top advisors, is access to the people that are making those big decisions for you, your business, and your clients. In many organizations, you never get this connection with a lot of people, both distribution and the executives. And so you want to try to be at a place that has that special culture because it's meaningful.
Yeah. I will second that. All right, bud. We'll do this
all
again.
All right, buddy. Hey, best wishes to you. Anytime you need to catch up, let me know. And hopefully this is valuable for your listeners. And thanks for everything you've done and are doing every day, man, to help a lot of people.
You bet, brother.